the biggest stories from the pages of the London Free Press and lfpress.com. This is the London Free Press Podcast with your host, Rachel Gilbert.
Welcome to the London Free Press Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Gilbert. City of London politicians are fine-tuning London's community encampment plan, which sets rules and zones for tent cities. The plan was first endorsed in June, but at a recent committee meeting, city staff recommended allowing encampments to be closer to residential areas than originally planned. The committee members also discussed other ways to serve London's homeless community this winter. So today I'm talking with London Free Press City Hall reporter Jack Moulton all about that discussion. Hi, Jack. How are you?
I'm good, Rachel. Thanks for having me.
Good. We're always happy to have you, of course. Let's just talk about, just give us a general overview of this encampment plan that was kind of set in June. What is this? What was the original thought for this?
So basically, I know one City Hall staff member described it to me as the city didn't really have a concrete document to really address encampments. They sort of went about it in a haphazard way. And this was sort of meant to basically be a blueprint for how the city goes about handling these in the future. So as you mentioned, they set some zones where encampments are totally banned. There's a lot of downtown parking lots and parks, Thames Park, Harris Park, Victoria Park. You cannot have an encampment there. And if there is one, they'll be cleared out or asked to move on. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, set up some basic and somewhat obvious rules like, you know, not having weapons on the premises or not having minors, you know, sets limits on, what kind of space tent cities can take up, how many people can be a part of them, how many tents. So really just trying to set a blueprint for the city to work within. Mm-hmm. But even then, they've said from the beginning that within these rules, some of them more than others, you know, they're not exactly going to have discretion with crime and whatnot. But, you know, with buffer zones, which is a big topic of conversation, there is a bit of discretion depending on the circumstances. Staff have sort of emphasized from the beginning, these are rules and guidelines to work within, but not, you know, enforced with an iron hand.
Okay. So originally they had proposed that any encampment had to be 100 meters from the edge of a residential property, right? So 100 meters is about the length of a football field. And then this week they were talking about shortening that to 25 meters, which to me seemed that's quite a vast difference. But what was the reasoning for that? Why are they thinking of making them or allowing them to be closer?
Yeah. So to address that, I might actually take a step back to June when this plan was first presented.
Sure.
The 100 meter number actually came from council in response to the recommendation originally, which was 10 meters. So even shorter than what was right. Put forward by council. They didn't like that. They set it to 100 meters of between an encampment and the property line of a residential lot. But both frontline workers within the whole of community response team and sort of the boards within that and city staff have now came back, saying, you know what, these buffers aren't really working. We should maybe look at 25 meters. And the reason why, one person put it, Greg Nash, who works with the London Intercommunity Health Center, said the buffer leaves just 18% of London's publicly owned space, whether it's green space or just other city-owned land, open for people to actually camp in. And as Kevin Dickens, the deputy city manager for social development, put it, that creates a sense of competition where lots of people are vying to get to these spots where they know they won't be bothered and can, you know, stick it out.
Yes.
And sometimes that creates a bit of tension, not only among, you know, people who live in those encampments, but also with city staff who are maybe trying to check in with those people or maybe something's awry and, you know, they need to step in to talk to someone. And Dickens flat out said that, you know, this can put City Hall staff at risk sometimes.
Not to mention so much competition for the few spaces that are allowable, right?
Exactly, because it's not just the residential property line either. Council set buffers from all sorts of different properties and things like playgrounds and soccer fields and those sorts of things. So, ideally residents would be able to enjoy these things. But Dickens further went on to say the impact of creating a wider buffer means that, people are kind of a little more visible. Maybe people were taking shelter in sort of tree lines and heavily forested areas in alleyways and things like that, where they might have been a little more out of sight and out of people's way sometimes. But these buffers create an issue where it sort of pushes them quite literally out into the open.
What is the tone of the discussion at these meetings? Because, London is doing so much in terms of trying to help the homeless with the whole of committee response. We've got agencies now really working together cohesively to try and come up with longer term solutions and supports for those who are experiencing homelessness. But at the same time, we don't want to see them. There's a lot of NIMBYism. We don't want them near us. We don't want them near our homes. We don't want them near the places that we go. We want them to be hidden, but we want to help them. So what is the it's a very fine line, that we're walking sometimes. What is the tone of these discussions at council?
You hit the nail on the head there. And some councillors touched on that on this committee meeting Tuesday night, where they were looking at the plan again, where they were sort of trying to balance it. Some of them quite literally said, we empathize with city staff who are having trouble with this, but we're also fielding complaints from our constituents who a couple councillors referenced are not able to, take a walk through the park or, enjoy their backyards in peace. And the sort of anecdotes you've always heard with residential areas that are close to encampments, people are wandering, drug use, sometimes theft or vandalism. A lot of those same issues rearing their head here. And that the idea of, I guess, bringing that physically closer to people really struck a nerve. There were quite a few folks who wrote into the meeting and a couple who spoke. Who said, I know there was one resident who lived near Watson Park, quite literally saying, I can't even remember how many times I've called 911 to, address things at this encampment when things get too rowdy, in contact with city staff regularly. So councillors are really trying to hit a fine line here. They empathize with trying to get this right, but it seems to be going more in the direction of catering to these resident concerns. A couple of counselors quite literally said everyone's concerned about, the people of encampments. What about the rights of the people who live nearby? So it really is a standoffish atmosphere. And I wrote in my story that even Councillor Hadley McAllister compared it to a kettle boiling over if things get too much worse.
And you had Sam Trasso at the meeting, Councillor Sam Trasso, warning that, against creating too many restrictions for those who are experiencing homelessness. What was his argument with that?
He wanted to be very careful about basically pressing the city's homeless too much. And he made reference to a court decision against the region of Waterloo. Which, to put it very simply and not do it any justice whatsoever, the region basically looked to evict residents of an encampment, but the court ruled that because the city and the region didn't have the sufficient shelter space to take these people, that they should be permitted to stay. Just in my previous role as a reporter in BC in the city of Prince George, a very similar court decision where the judge found that no, you can't move these people if they have nowhere to go. So basically, Councillor Trasso was warning against maybe creating a similar situation there where things come to a point where,
Where else will we put them?
exactly.
They also discussed service depots. That was something that was it new in the last year or two? This is something that City Hall provides as a service to those who are homeless and specifically at the encampments. So what was the discussion around service depots for this year?
Yeah, so the encampment plan sought to actually add new depots. There were recommendations, at the very least, for locations, and they acknowledged that there may not be the funding for all of them. Not to mention these depots are usually quite mobile. If things slow down at one, they might move over to where it's more needed. They recommended new locations at Evergreen Park, at the former Fairmount School, Kiwanis Central South Park, the city lot number 12, and Thompson Park. So those were lofted out there.
What's included in the service depots? What do they do? What do they provide?
So basically, they're designed to meet residents of encampment where they are, if not with more sort of essential needs like food, water, even sometimes porta potties, garbage cleanup, a little bit of that, but also an outlet to connect with city staff and potentially get you hooked up with supports of whatever variety you might need or get a connection into housing. And so those have been set up at a few locations and they recommended new ones, but there was limited enthusiasm, as I mentioned. Councillor McAllister was sort of lamenting the fact that a lot of these depots existing and new are focused in the central and east regions, and how it's been touched on several times, especially in Old East Village with Councillor Susan Stevenson, an over-concentration of social services and things of that nature in the East End, if not Old East Village, Hamilton Road, downtown, and further east. So there was a motion from McAllister to have the city basically defer choosing any new service depot locations until the next committee meeting, the next cycle, and come back with a new list that was more inclusive of options across the city, not just in the East End, which on the surface of it is understandable from especially those core-centered wards. But at the same time, councillors were saying, you know, these depots are going where people are.
Yeah.
And then there was a counter-argument that, well, if you relocate them somewhere else, people will follow. So a little bit of a back and forth there, but ultimately council sided with McAllister in a very tight vote, an 8-7 vote.
Okay.
They opted to defer this until the next meeting to really get a more exhaustive list with some slightly the buffer zone was included with these depots as well. But because city staff told McAllister that a 100-meter residential zone buffer from these depots would virtually eliminate all of those new options, they sort of loosened it up 50 to 100 meters from a residential property line. And that, and they added, you know, some new stipulations that a community meeting has to be held. All residents have to be notified within, I believe it was a 120-meter radius, those sorts of things.
Sure. So what's the proposal going forward regarding the buffer zones? Is it, what did they kind of decide on? Because this still all has to go to full council to be decided upon, right?
That's right. So they kept with the 100-meter buffers. So that will go to council on November 5th, where it'll likely pass. This was a 10-5 vote, not exactly that close. And this was strategic priorities and policy, which is a committee of all councillors and the mayor. So opinions are not likely to change, but it does still sort of need that final stamp of approval at council.
And then the service depots, they're going to wait probably for another list of locations.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. The committee also voted on money to be used and spending money to provide basic needs for those at the encampments and just people experiencing homelessness in general. How much money? What are the needs that would cover?
Yeah, so those basic needs are more along the lines of what might come to mind when you think basic needs, you know, food, sure. water. Garbage cleanup, those sorts of things.
Okay.
It was pitched that $141,000 would be taken from a reserve fund to fund that. What ended up happening was council voted to change what reserve fund that came from exactly. Not a huge deal, no tax levy impact, but Councillor Susan Stevenson voted to slash that amount to $99,700, which was successful. She was concerned that this was an increase of what was previously used to fund these sorts of needs, and said that she wasn't comfortable dishing out this amount of money for this kind of thing.
Okay.
And then council approved using that money, but interestingly, Stevenson voted against that.
Okay. All right. And then they also voted to extend some drop-in services at the CMHA's coffee house. Where is that? And what is that? What does that include? What services will they get? Just longer hours at that location?
Yeah, so that's over on Hamilton Road, and
Okay.
it was mentioned by staff, it would be funded out of a surplus of winter response dollars from this past year, which we learned was $96,000.
Okay.
And that will go towards keeping Coffee House open from December through till the end of May.
Oh, I see.
Into next year. And
for the
yeah,
winter.
Drop-in services. So
like daytime.
Exactly. Daytime
Okay.
spaces where you can come in, you can warm up, get a bite to eat, get a drink, and those sorts of things to
And hang out.
address to your needs during the day, but no overnight spaces.
Sure. Okay. Well, so far, all of these are proposals, and we're going to go, they'll all be voted on at full council on November 5th. You said that's right.
That's right. And another element to this was that
Okay.
this probably should have mentioned it off the top, to be fair. This entire plan is estimated, at least in implementation, to cost $2.3 million. So that's to, enact the different functions of it.
Mm-hmm.
And while that was initially pitched to come from a reserve fund, so again, no tax levy impact, council ultimately voted to have Mayor Josh Morgan try and lobby Queen's Park and Ottawa to help cover that funding. A lot of the same arguments that, it's not sustainable to fund these sorts of endeavors off of the property taxes. And, there were specific mentions of the $250 million fund from the federal government announced in the spring, I believe, to help cities address encampments. Money has not started flowing from that yet. I believe, to my knowledge, the federal government is still working with provinces to help negotiate the terms of that. And then
Okay.
it would be up to the provinces to disperse. And city staff mentioned they really don't have much to say about that fund at this rate, just because nothing has really moved, including how much London might potentially get from that fund.
Sure.
That's still unknown. So
right.
they're going to try to get this amount, $2.3 million, covered by that fund. But what's interesting is that they're also attempting to draw from the same fund in order to fund Arcade and their 90 winter response beds that they're looking to make a permanent, basically, addition to the city's shelter capacity. 90 beds, 30 at their location on Dundas in Old East Village, and 90 in Midtown at William Street there.
Okay.
They're looking for over $4 million a year to run those 90 beds year round, which they argue is a bit of a cost saving measure compared to ramping up and ramping down in a traditional winter response. And the budget update for this year unveiled this week, Mayor Josh Morgan said he was confident that either Ottawa or Queen's Park or both could step in to help fund this. Again,
okay.
Didn't want to put it on the property tax basis, but both of these endeavors are sort of competing for that same pot of money or,
yes,
the attention of senior governments. So it'll be interesting to see if one or both or neither get funded. It was recognized by council that maybe London receives a piece of the funding that's needed for part of these endeavors. It's
mm-hmm.
It's very possible that they could fund, let's say, with the encampment strategy, some but not all of the components. So
right.
It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out over the coming months.
Right. Only so much to go around. Okay. Well, we'll see how this vote goes on November 5th, and hopefully some of that money starts flowing to London to help with some of these costs. Thank you so much, Jack. I'm sure we'll be watching your stories at lfpress.com, and we'll be talking to you about this again. Thank you.
Thanks again, Rachel.